At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-lunch pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
This is VSiN's College Basketball Betting Podcast. Here is your host, Tim Murray.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Basketball Betting Podcast. I am Tim Murray, joined by Adam Burke at Skating Tripods, where you can find Mr. Burke. I am at One Tim Murray, and you can read Adam Burke's content all over the place. He's been busting his hump, getting us great content and getting us ready to go for the NCAA tournament. This is the East Region Breakdown. The number one seed, Purdue. The number two seed, Marquette. The number three seed is Kansas State. Four is Tennessee. And the Dookie Blue Devils sitting there as the five seed. Adam, is the East Region the weakest region in the field of 68?
Ooh. That's a good question. Throwing some fireballs out there to start with this segment. Yeah, I don't know. I want to say yes, because I do think it has the weakest number one seed by a pretty good margin. But Marquette is a really quality team. We'll talk about Kansas really State. And you know, I like Kansas State, and I like the draw that they got here as well. Tennessee has a high gear. I just think Rick Barnes is really good at holding them back. And Kentucky is the sixth seed in this field that absolutely nobody wants to play. So, yeah, I would say so. I mean, you know, the West is clearly the best, and it's not even close. But I would say the East is probably fourth in the pecking order.
Before we jump into the games, I've been referencing this date basically the entire previews we've done of all these conference tournaments. The last month, basically, of the season, February 4th to now. And since February 4th, which is a data point of about 10, 11 games, this region, their one seed, Purdue, is 19th. Their six seed, Kentucky, is 18th. The two seed, Marquette, is 15th. And the five seed, Duke, is 14th. So kind of goes to show where this region has been headed as the year has been going on. However, and Tennessee, by the way, is 22nd. However, Duke has been playing very well. And what's interesting, Adam, is, you know, a couple weeks ago, it was, you could write off Duke. And then they go out and win a conference tournament. Credit to Duke. They're healthy. They're playing really well. They're really good defensively. And obviously, we'll get to their showdown with Oral Roberts. But you win a conference tournament against a historically down ACC, which per the metrics is a worse conference than the Mountain West, and now we are supposed to believe they're national championship contenders. This has gone from Duke was under the radar to, in a span of 2 weeks, Duke is way over the top, in my opinion, getting way too much love.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with it. You know, I mean, Jeremy Roach kind of being banged up throughout a lot of the season was, I think, hurtful to the Blue Devils. But, you know, as you said, and as I'm sure you kind of talked about, you know, in terms of looking at the right side of the bracket with humans, you know, there's just, when you look at the ACC, there's not a whole lot of reasons to want to support any of the teams in that conference. And maybe Duke is the best of the bunch, but very tough draw against Oral Roberts. And I mean, I think Tennessee beats Louisiana. That's not a particularly strong matchup for Duke either. So I don't know why they're getting so much love. I guess it's just because Purdue is the number one seed in their, you know, part of the bracket. But yeah, I'm not excited about Duke or the draw here for them.
Yeah, 9-game winning streak, win the ACC tournament. But look, ACC, you beat Notre Dame, Syracuse, Louisville, Virginia Tech, NC State, North Carolina. That's one NCAA tournament team. That's an 11 seed. Another team that is the biggest disappointment in all of college basketball. And three other teams that were disasters. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that because I don't want to get fired for being too critical of Syracuse. So, all right, let's get into showdowns. And we'll start with the 1-16. We don't know the 16 matchup. So, no, we do. No, we don't.
Well, we might as well talk about it, right?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Texas Southern and Fairleigh Dickinson. Texas Southern, who might as well just buy some condos in Dayton, because I feel like Texas Southern is there every single year. And shout out to Johnny Jones and his squad. They were the 8 seed in the SWAC, and they went on a run. They beat the 1 seed Alcorn State, Alabama A&M, and then beat Grambling State in the championship to earn a trip to Dayton, where they will play Fairleigh Dickinson, who is coming out of the NEC, which is by far and away the worst conference in all of college basketball. Wasn't great to start, and then they lost Bryant and Mount St. Mary's last year to make it even worse. So you've got Fairleigh Dickinson, you've got Texas Southern, and this game will take place on Wednesday night in Dayton. The spread right now is Texas Southern -2, and the public seems to be loading up on the Fighting Johnny Jones out of the SWAC.
Yeah, maybe I'm part of the public. I don't know. But I took Texas Southern in this game. I think there's something to be said about having played in this game, being in that atmosphere in Dayton, playing in that pressure cooker over first four. Texas A&M Corpus Christi was in one of those games last year. They beat SEMO State. To be fair, as we talked about during the South Region podcast, I mean, the Islanders did not play well in that game. They got very fortunate to win it with a big free throw disparity. But I think it's a beneficial thing to have been there. And for Fairleigh Dickinson, they are, I'll put it nicely, and I'll kind of do the G-rated version here. They are pathetic defensively. I mean, they are 362nd in the country in adjusted defensive efficiency, and they played one of the three worst schedules in college or college basketball, and they're that bad on defense with a 21% turnover percentage. So, like, teams just make every shot they take basically against this team. And while Texas Southern is offensively challenged, I mean, Fairleigh Dickinson's just, they're bad. They don't even, frankly, deserve to be there. I mean, they didn't even win their conference tournament. They got in because Merrimack wasn't allowed to play in the NCAA tournament, which I echo your sentiments. It's archaic and it's ridiculous that we have this long transition period for some of these
schools. They've been in Division I basketball for 4 years, and they can't make the NCAA tournament. What are we doing?
I don't know. But I laid Texas Southern -2.
I can't disagree. I haven't played it. By the way, fun fact, and I think, I forget, I apologize to the CBS Sports writer, but he wrote a story about Fairleigh Dickinson, and it would be fun to see Fairleigh Dickinson play Purdue, because their backcourt is 5'8 and 5'9, and the tallest player that gets minutes is 6'6 at Fairleigh Dickinson, and they would have to play Zach Edey. So that would just be kind of fun to see unfold. Before we do get into this game, let's get into Arizona State, Nevada real quickly. The other first four game, maybe as entertaining as the Pittsburgh Mississippi State game that we just watched, which had the most lead changes in 5 years in the NCAA tournament, 21 lead changes. And for Mississippi State, every chance to win that game, wide open three, then a tip in, missed both. And Pittsburgh advanced on to play Iowa State. So Arizona State laying two against Nevada. Here's the thing, and I haven't played it yet, but Nevada, Adam, my goodness, everyone thinks they shouldn't be here. They're on a three-game losing streak. And then Arizona State's kind of played better here. This is, and I know you're not super into betting splits and all that stuff, but I haven't heard a single soul out there say, I like the Wolfpack in this spot. So this is screaming Admiral Akbar trap to me. This line sitting there at two. No one thinks Nevada should be here. They lost to Wyoming, UNLV, and San Jose State to wrap up the regular season. All three teams that, you know, had no business beating an NCAA tournament team. And now it's only two. It kind of makes you think a little bit. I think Arizona State's the better team, but I don't know. It feels just too good to be true with this Nevada-Arizona State game.
Well, I will tell you, I mean, Bart Torvik has Nevada slightly favored in this game. They're a 0.6-point favorite in this one. So, look, I mean, Arizona State is atrocious offensively. 271st in the country in two-point percentage, 312th in the country in three-point percentage. They won games because of their defense. They're good at forcing turnovers. They're good at two-point defense. But Nevada takes really, really good care of the basketball. I wouldn't bet this game with your money. I wouldn't bet this game with Sean King's money. I wouldn't bet it with Greg Peterson's money. I might do it with John Goulet's money, but I have no interest in betting this guy. I have no clue what happens in this one. Hopefully it's just a good game.
Yeah. I mean, look, Mississippi State and Pitt was not, that thing ain't going to the Hall of Fame, but it was entertaining. It's like what Denzel Washington said at training day about the newspaper. It's 95% bullshit, but it entertains me. So that was what, you know, the first game was. So hopefully that's what this game will be. We leaned in Nevada just to full on contrarian, but we move on. Let's get to the East region. Purdue against the winner of Texas Southern and Fairleigh Dickinson. I think both you and I believe it'll be Texas Southern. We don't have a line on this game because the game doesn't exist at time of record, but do you see any turbulence for Purdue in either one of these potential spots?
I mean, maybe a little bit against Texas Southern, just because they're a well-coached team. And look, I mean, don't let the record fool you. First of all, they really play up to the non-conference. Yeah. They really, really play up. Maybe it carried over into conference play a little bit. That was the most talented team in that conference. So it's not really a big surprise that they won the conference tournament. Purdue, if they play Fairleigh Dickinson, as you mentioned, I mean, it may be the greatest size mismatch of all time in the NCAA tournament. So I wouldn't expect Purdue to have any issues there. But just thinking about Purdue long term, Matt Painter's not great in the NCAA tournament. So I didn't even pick Purdue to get past the first weekend, to be honest with you.
Well, we will get to that, and let's get to it right now, because this matchup is awesome and
irritating.
Adam, I've known you now for a couple years. I have never seen you get this fired up. And John Goulet, our program director, said we need to have next year some sort of stream where it can be unfiltered, where you and I just react to the matchups. Because there were a couple that got me excited, but this one fired you up, man. And I know you talked about it in the South region breakdown with Charleston, South San Diego State. But I echo your sentiments. I really, really like Memphis. I'm not super high on Florida Atlantic, but they're good. I mean, they're well deserving. They're good coach. They're well coached. They beat the crap out of UAB. But this sucks. I mean, this matchup is great, but it stinks that two solid mid-majors are playing each other in this 8-9 game.
I mean, these are two top 30 teams in the country, and you put them in the 8-9 game. And not only that, you put them in the 8-9 game against each other. And I will say this, it doesn't piss me off as much as when Memphis had to play Gonzaga last year, because those were two exceptionally dangerous teams. Obviously, Gonzaga was a number one seed, so certainly they were dangerous. But
what about when Kentucky had to play Wichita State in the second round?
Yeah, it's just, you know, I mentioned this in the South Region pod, as you said. I mean, the selection committee does this shit every single year, and it pisses me off to no end. I mean, Florida Atlantic, say what you will about them, they're a top 40 team, according to Torvik, in offensive and defensive efficiency. They're a top 20 team in effective field goal percentage offense and defense. They're a top 31 team in two-point percentage and three-point percentage offense. This is a really good team that either would have scared the shit out of a major conference team or just outright beaten them. Instead, they draw a Memphis team playing at a very, very high level right now. Honestly, I don't know who wins this game. And the line kind of implies that, you know, it is maybe a little bit closer than people realize. It seems like a lot of people do like Memphis, but Memphis is just a bucket favorite here. I don't know who wins this game, but it incenses me that these two teams are playing each other.
So I got a text today from someone in our industry and said, "Hey, why don't you like Florida Atlantic?" I said, "I got nothing against Florida Atlantic. They're really good. But I just like Memphis more." And I'm not trying to fall into, you know, they just beat Houston, because they did, and they kicked their ass, by the way. But they didn't have Marcus Sasser. But look at what Memphis is capable of. Memphis has played four games against one seeds, three against Houston, one against Alabama. They're 4-0 ATS in those games, and they just beat Houston by double digits on a neutral floor and also lost their regular season finale to Houston on a buzzer beater. This team is not scared. This team is not a James Wiseman, Imani Bates, you know, one and done type of team. This is a grown ass man team. I mean, Kendrick Davis has been playing college basketball for 5 years. This dude was an elite scorer in the American Athletic Conference at SMU last year, was a prized recruit in the transfer portal that Penny Hardaway was able to pull in, however he did, whether it was NIL or whatever, doesn't matter. He's there. They got size. DeAndre Williams is a big boy, started his career at Evansville, last three seasons here at Memphis. You know, Alex Lomax can make some big shots. We saw that in the championship game. I really like this Memphis team. I hated the fact that they drew Florida Atlantic, but you know what? It's never going to be easy. And I think they take care of business. Florida Atlantic deserves all the credit and the accolades that they got this year. I bet against them in the CUSA championship game, and I was very wrong. They kicked UAB's ass. Granted, UAB, I thought, played very poorly. Maybe their worst game of the season. Jelly Walker couldn't get anything going. But, hey, that was the game. They won it on neutral floor. I don't know which way the public is thinking. I think the public thinks that Purdue is very vulnerable as a one, and the winner of this game could beat them. I think that's possible. But I'm in on Memphis, and I know the number is going against me. I don't like that, but I'm going to take the money line price at minus 125, which opened at minus 145 on Sunday. So clearly money coming in on the Owls. But I just, when I look at Memphis, Adam, and I know I'm going, you know, kind of deep in on it, I love the way this team is playing. And here we go again. Take a drink. February 4th on Bart Torvik, last month of the season, Memphis, 10th best team in the country. This team is the real deal. And you know, we were talking on my show to Jamie and Christian, former Division I men's basketball coach. He's coached in the NCAA tournament before, and he said he loves the fact that, you know, these two teams have coaches that are just going to let their guys play. And that's going to be really interesting. Dusty May for Florida Atlantic, Penny for Memphis. But I'm going to take the more talented team. I'm going to take the Tigers here in this 8-9 matchup. So long-winded, but I'm in on Memphis. And then the last one I'll mention here, actually I'll hold it for when we get to the regions, even though I just kind of tipped my hand here.
Yeah, I want to mention real quick, so Memphis has lost 8 games this season by a combined 30 points. So it's not like they've had a whole lot of bad performances. I mean, maybe their record didn't stand out a whole lot up until recently here, but they haven't had many bad performances. The other thing I want to mention real quick about this game and why I think Florida Atlantic is maybe a little bit more live than some people think. Florida Atlantic shooting a 3 almost 44% of the time, and they're 30th in the nation, 37.2%. Memphis doesn't really let teams inside. They force them to shoot from the outside. Almost 43% of shots against the Tigers have been threes. Now, teams are only shooting 30.8%, but I don't really think of the AAC as a great offensive conference. So that's a really interesting thing for me that could keep Florida Atlantic in this game. They may score by threes while Memphis scores by twos, because the Tigers only take a 3 about 28.8% of the time. So 15% fewer of Memphis's shot attempts are threes compared to Florida Atlantic. So if the Owls are hitting those shots, then they're scoring by threes and Memphis is scoring by twos, and we'll see how the game plays out.
Well, and there's a reason that this total has climbed from 150 to 153. KenPom projects this as 72 possessions. And Memphis is one of the most high-flying teams in the country when you look at just how they get up and down the floor. Florida Atlantic, kind of middle of the pack in pace, but, you know, look at the UAB game. That game was up and down, up and down. They're not a team who's going to dictate pace. Memphis wants to go 17th in the country in adjusted tempo with 71.8 possessions per game, 15.8 seconds per possession. Yeah, that is something to note there if you're looking for a total. I expect this game to be high-flying, really high-scoring, really entertaining game. And if you're wondering when this is the late-night game on Friday night, so super late. This one will probably array around, 9:30 or so tip time down there in your old neck of the woods. In the Midwest, in Columbus, Ohio.
Last thing about this game, because this game is fascinating. There's so many things I like about it, but something else about Florida Atlantic I think is really interesting is that because they're so good on both ends of the floor, and specifically because they're so good on offense, they're okay at playing at the other team's tempo. When they played North Texas, they played a 58 possession game and a 55 possession game. When they played Charlotte, they played a 59 and 57 possessions. They don't necessarily set the tempo in their games. They kind of play the other team's tempo, and Memphis wants to run, as you mentioned. So I think it makes sense that the total's going up here on this game.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm kind of happy this game is tipping off when it is, because knowing how I'm on Memphis and I've invested in Memphis, if they lose, it won't ruin my whole entire first round, because it's going to be the last game of the weekend, or last game of the first round, not the weekend. So I got that going for me. All right, let's get to Duke and Oral Roberts. When this game came out, I started laughing. I'm like, yes, what a matchup. Give me this Duke and Oral Roberts showdown. I had to go back. It has been a long, long time since Duke has been higher than a 4 seed, or lower than a 4 seed, I guess. That was in 2007 when they were a 6 against,
and they lost to VCU.
VCU. And this is a Duke team, a Duke program that is not used to being these types of seeds. They were a 2 in last year they were 2. Excuse me. They didn't make the field in 21. They were a 1 in 19, 2, 2, 4, 1, 3. The last time was 2007 when they lost to VCU. And prior to that was 96. They were an 8. And I think they lost to Eastern Michigan, if my memory serves me correct. I want to say that was Earl Boykins in Eastern Michigan. But they're a 5, and they're playing Oral Roberts. But this Duke team has been playing very well. They won the ACC tournament. They've got one of the longest winning streaks in college basketball. But the team that does have the longest winning streak, Adam Burke, is the Oral Roberts Eagles. And that is who is playing this Duke Blue Devils team. Primetime, Thursday, 7 o'clock, CBS in Orlando. And Oral Roberts is catching six and a half. And it's been interesting today. Those hooks have started to disappear. It looks like a little bit of love coming in for Oral Roberts here in this spot.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the handicap here is pretty simple. Oral Roberts hits their threes, they win the game. If they don't, then they may even struggle to cover here because this is a team shoots a three about 46% of the time. I don't expect them to get inside much against Duke. Duke has been very, very good defending at the rim. They're pretty good at kind of, you know, sort of forcing teams into those mid-range and long jump shots, which Oral Roberts is, you know, largely fine with taking the long jump shots. They never get to the free throw line. And one other thing about this team, and this is why it's always so difficult to kind of pinpoint these Cinderellas, the Summit League is a defense optional league. I mean, there are very few teams that play defense here. Usually the teams that do wind up being really good. But for Oral Roberts this year, I mean, South Dakota State had a really down year. Nobody else in the conference was all that good. That's what concerns me. I mean, they haven't played a quadrant two game since January 9th, and they played a few in the non-conference. They played St. Mary's, Houston, Utah State, New Mexico. So three really, really good teams. Those are their four losses, actually. But, man, they haven't been tested in a long time, and that's what kind of concerns me here. I don't have a play in this game, but obviously, you know, you get a trendy 12 over 5 kind of thing.
Yeah, agreed. If forced to play, I would take the points with Oral Roberts. You know, to me, it's interesting when I look at this matchup because I think, you know, everybody loves the trendy 12 over 5. That is kind of what's been the go-to. But there is this other trend happening. We'll get to it when we take a look at the odds to win the region, that a ton of people believe that this Duke team can come out of this region. So it's a little bit of, I think there's some folks who believe that this Duke team could come out of the region, but I also think there's a handful of people that think this Duke team will struggle to cover against this Oral Roberts team. So I would lean towards the Eagles taking the points, but not a play for me here, but it is interesting to note that the hooks are starting to disappear on this Duke Oral Roberts game. Max Asemus has been to the Sweet 16 before, was on that Oral Roberts team that made the magical run in the COVID season when they beat Ohio State, then they beat Florida. This team, I would say, is better than that Oral Roberts team. But you know, Kevin O'Banner was on that Oral Roberts team. He was really good. Ultimately, he obviously went on to, you know, Texas Tech. So, but Connor Vanover, I mean, this is interesting. I mean, Connor Vanover is a guy on this roster who is, what, 7'4"? Played at Arkansas last year. So it's not just Max Asemus and everybody else. Kareem Thompson was on that team that made it to the Sweet 16. So there's a lot of leftover pieces. Obviously, the obvious one is Max Asemus. So It's kind of the youth versus the experience when it comes to this game. And more often than not, I tend to favor the experience.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly understand that point of view. I think one thing that's kind of interesting to talk about here, and I mean, we don't want to go too deep into the weeds in this game, but, you know, John Shire. I mean, we don't know what we're going to get from John Shire here in this tournament. I mean, it's been Duke and Coach K for as long as any of us can remember, you know, and is the fact that Duke is peaking at the right time, having won 9 in a row, is that a sign of maybe John Shire, not only his maturation process as a head coach, but also the maturation process of his roster? Is it just a positive sign for them going forward? But then the second thing is, if Duke wins this game, I think one of the most important factors in looking at the second round is coaching, because you get this very quick turnaround. Every game is emotional and high octane and all that March Madness, but you get this really quick turnaround. against teams you've never played before. You've never scouted. You've never watched video on. You've never really paid attention to. So that's kind of a corollary point, I think, to all this Duke Futures love is I hate Rick Barnes, but I don't know what happens with John Shire against Rick Barnes in the second round. You know, I don't know what happens. Let's say Duke beats Memphis or Purdue or FAU or whatever in the Sweet 16, and the quick turnaround to play a Marquette or a Kansas State or a Kentucky. Like, that's what worries me about Duke that I think people betting the future aren't even thinking about.
Well, let's get to the Tennessee game. I hate Rick Barnes. Tennessee.
I mean, with good reason, right? I mean, he's had Texas and Tennessee and some of the teams before he got to Knoxville. He is a below 500 straight up coach in the NCAA tournament, which is absolutely egregious.
He's 2-13 ATS since 2009.
Sounds about right.
but Louisiana Lafayette has been a very trendy dog, and the market is moving against the trend, which always kind of tells you something. But we had Derek Stevens on the Betting the Bracket show on Sunday, and it was very fascinating to hear that they opened, Circa opened 9 in favor of Tennessee, and there were some spots in the market that opened as high as 14. So they've met kind of in the middle, started to trend back towards Tennessee, and ultimately, am I going to lay 11.5 points with Tennessee? Hell no. But I think this is a bad matchup. I think you could speak to it a little better than I can, but I don't think this is a very good Louisiana Lafayette team. And, you know, KenPom has it as a 12-point game. They rolled through the Sun Belt conference tournament. They beat Texas State, which was a pretty solid win there. But I'm not all in on Louisiana. You know, the conference champ Southern Miss was a massive long shot in the regular season. So I think, yes, Zakai Ziegler's out. I think we all know that. Bears repeating for Tennessee. I don't know what the run's going to be. I've been saying for months that I'm going to fade Tennessee in the NCAA tournament. I'm not fading them here. I'm not playing this game, but it would be Tennessee or pass, believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, as much as the Sun Belt got better in football with some of the additions that they picked up, that was not the case on the basketball side. And as you mentioned, I believe Southern Miss was picked to finish like 11th or 13th or something.
I think they were like 250-1 in some spots to win the conference.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, look, I mean, credit to them. They had a very, very strong regular season. But look, I think Louisiana's a decent team. I don't think they're a great team. I think one of the problems here for them in this game is that the things that they do well, Tennessee either does better or can, you know, kind of counterfeit those advantages. So, for example, Louisiana, 36.6% from three. That's awesome. Tennessee, number one three-point defense in the country. Louisiana Lafayette, top 30 in offensive rebounding percentage. That's great. Tennessee, fifth in the country in offensive rebounding percentage. So the potential advantages that Louisiana could have had simply aren't there for them in this game. It's not a good draw for them whatsoever. Now, again, nobody steps on their crank more in the NCAA tournament than Rick Barnes, so I'm not going to take that guy in any context here. But I do think that the under is very much in play for this game here. Total's 136.5 for this one. I know we'll recap this in the best bets, but Tennessee is really dependent on shooting the three, and they're pretty bad at it. So it's an example of how Rick Barnes just isn't a very good head coach. But I think the under is very much in play for this game. Tennessee should be able to put it in cruise control in the second half, I think. And also, they play at a pretty slow tempo. So I like under 136.5. It's one of the few totals I bet here for the first round.
The 6-11 matchup in the East region, Providence and Kentucky. This game in Greensboro, North Carolina. A Friday CBS game, 7:10 Eastern. 144.5 is the total. Kentucky was a team a couple weeks ago that I thought was a team that could make a run and maybe still could, but you know, they have a Vanderbilt problem, which apparently Yale does too. But you look at the last month of the season, and their two losses were to Vanderbilt, and they really weren't that competitive in the SEC tournament. And then you look at Providence. And Providence down the stretch, you know, loses 4 out of 5. Granted, 2 of them are to Connecticut. Their lone win is against Georgetown. But let me ask you this. This Ed Cooley to Georgetown rumor mill is really rolling fast. Seth Davis was tweeting about it on Tuesday. Jeff Goodman was tweeting about it on Tuesday. Players have definitely heard about it. You know, people are sending it to them. Is that going to be a distraction in this game? And, you know, lastly, it's the Bryce Hopkins Revenge Bowl because he was at Kentucky last year and now he's at Providence. So anything you see in this spot with Kentucky laying 4 against Providence?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Ed Cooley thing could be a distraction. I think the bigger distraction for Providence is where the hell did their defense go? Over the last 5 games, opponents shooting 46.2% from 3. Are they able to figure that out here taking on Kentucky? I don't know if that'll be the case. I mean, Kentucky, look, obviously the more talented team, they had flashes, they had sparks throughout SEC play, just weren't able to put it together consistently enough. But to me, this is kind of another one. I mean, Providence, a top 15 team in offensive rebounding percentage. Kentucky's better on the offensive glass. They're second in the country. They're better on the defensive glass. They're a better offense. They're a better defense. I just think this is a tough matchup for a Providence team that, you know, kind of, I don't want to say backed their way into the tournament, but certainly wasn't playing well down the stretch. Kentucky, much stronger strength of schedule. Look, I think this is kind of one where, you know, I talk about this a lot in terms of like college football, where, you know, if you lose to an FCS team in the first week or two of the season, like nobody forgets about it, right? All year long, they remember, oh yeah, you're the team that lost to, you know, Furman or Wofford or whoever it is. Nobody seems to be willing to overlook that South Carolina loss for Kentucky at Rupp Arena, and understandably so, but I don't think that game necessarily defines this team. I think they may actually be a little bit cheap and a little bit undervalued in this game. So Cooley's a great tournament coach, whether it's the Big East or the NCAA tournament, but I think Kentucky's just, you know, I think they're just a better team, and maybe they just lost focus at times throughout the regular season.
And Providence did a really good job last year. They were a team that nobody wanted to back once they got into the NCAA tournament. They were, hey, this team is overrated. They're lucky. South Dakota State was a chic first-round upset pick in the, I think that was 4-13. And then Richmond was very popular. I think I bet it in the second round. They smashed them, and they actually covered against Kansas in the Sweet 16. So, you know, Ed Cooley as a dog has been a very profitable run. But, yeah. And lastly here, I'm curious. I don't know. I get sometimes too in the weeds of, hey, this team's going to be extra motivated because of this and that. Kentucky did lose to St. Peter's last year. You should be motivated no matter what in the NCAA tournament. But this was a 2-seed with the player of the year in Oscar Tshiebwe, and they lost to St. Peter's. They're back with him. And, you know, they've got this massive recruiting class coming in. They're, you know, they're going to want, I don't know. I like Kentucky a little bit in this spot. And I do wonder if this Ed Cooley, you know, he's going to Georgetown stuff is going to be in the back of any minds of the team a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think so. And look, I mean, for Kentucky, a lot of the same guys are still there. You know, Shibway's there, Wheeler's around. You know, it's in, obviously, Calipari's still there too. Yeah, I mean, when you get it, I don't want to say you got it is embarrassing. It was embarrassing.
St. Peter's, it's in embarrassing. The moment. Yeah.
Right. It is. In the moment, for sure. I mean, obviously, St. Peter's goes on that run, and maybe you think, okay, well, you know what? Maybe they were just a pretty good team. But yeah, it's. It's a scenario where I think Kentucky needs to bounce back. And ultimately I think that they do. The one thing here is like the Big East is really good, which is probably why Providence didn't go to Dayton. They kind of were able to ride the accomplishments of the other teams in their conference. And I think it kind of makes me wonder how good Providence really is, or if they were just propped up in the metrics because Marquette, Xavier, Creighton, you know, UConn, all these teams are just really, really good.
Well, the winner of Kentucky-Providence, and I think both of us believe it will be Kentucky, get Kansas State and Montana State. And Montana State, a team that last year was a popular, I don't know if upset, but cover pick, and that was not the case. They were obliterated by Texas Tech in the first round of the NCAA tournament last year, losing that game 97-62. But the Bobcats are back. They are the winners of the Big Sky. And I'll be honest, I'm just going to leave this game to you because you are one who loves to handicap the Big Sky. This has been a very popular pick to cover because the number has moved in favor of Montana State, now sitting at 8.5. So do you think the Bobcats are live here against the Purple Cats?
You know, I don't see it. I mean, look, you mentioned I like handicapping the Big Sky. I think there's a wide variety of teams, and I think that should help, in theory, a team like Montana State, regardless of who they end up playing. They've seen fast teams. They've seen slow teams. They've seen teams relying on the three. They've seen teams that get to the rim. They've seen a lot of different things here en route to the NCAA tournament. But the problem for me is, you know, you mentioned last year they get decimated by Texas Tech. They played two quadrant one games this year. They lost by 30 to Oregon and 21 to Arizona. So in the games where they've stepped up in class over the last 2 years, it hasn't gone well for Danny Sprinkle's team. Now, I'll say this. This year's defense is substantially better, but also they're about 5% worse in three-point percentage. So I'm not really seeing what other people are seeing here in this game. I don't really get it. Montana State was 15-1 against quadrant four opponents. They're 8-8 against quadrant three or better. And as I mentioned, they got blown out by the two quadrant one teams they played. I don't get it. I mean, I don't know if there's something people don't like about Kansas State. I don't really see it. Maybe Montana State forces some takeaways in this game, but Kansas State should have their fair share of them too. I mean, I'm not laying it with Kansas State, but we can talk a little bit more about the Wildcats going forward because I do think they're kind of interesting from a futures standpoint.
Yeah, we'll get to the futures part of the region here momentarily. The 7-10 showdown, I think you and I had a similar reaction to Michigan State and USC getting paired up against each other in this spot. This game will be played in Columbus. It'll be the early game or one of the early games on Friday. And Michigan State's a two-point favorite. This is the ultimate shoulder shrug, I don't know, type of game. Michigan State, you know, I don't know. You look at the Hoggard versus Izzo situation in the Big Ten tournament where there was some, looks like some eye rolling. I don't know if we want to play too much into that with Michigan State. You know, Michigan State, 40th in offensive efficiency, 40th in defensive efficiency. Pretty good three-point shooting team, though. Fourth in the country in three-point shooting percentage, but they don't really shoot a ton of threes. Only 33 possession of their possessions end in three-pointers. And you look at USC, another kind of balanced team, right? 43rd in offensive efficiency, 49th in defensive efficiency. So I don't know what to think in this. I feel like as this bracket has gone on, I've lost steam. I just don't have much bets on these two spots here. So I got no bet on Michigan State and USC. Anything you have?
Well, I did my rant about, you know, Memphis and FAU being paired together, San Diego State and Charleston. I think VCU St. Mary's is another laughable pairing from the selection committee. But I think this one's perfect. You got USC, who's joining the Big Ten. You got Michigan, who's obviously been a fixture in the Big Ten. My favorite thing about this game, when everyone's hung over on Friday morning, this is the first game on the board. So you can kind of just give yourself an extra half hour to get your life together, you know, crack that hair of the dog beer or something like that. I have no thoughts on who will win this game. I think both of these teams are very subpar. Neither team gets to the rim. Both teams take way too many mid-range jumpers. Not only do I not care who wins, I think they both get steamrolled by Marquette in the second round.
Well, let's get to Marquette, wrapping up the East region. 2-15, Marquette picked 9th in the Big East by the coaches. Two teams better than two teams. That would be DePaul and Georgetown. And that is it for Marquette, who ended up winning the conference regular season, winning the conference tournament. And we actually had Shaka Smart on the radio show that I do in Milwaukee on Tuesday. And he talked about, yeah, we use that as motivation all year long. We talked about it a ton. And here
you
they
mean
are.
Like how the Georgia Bulldogs used motivation when people said they were going to be 7-5?
Yeah, exactly. Very similar. They get Vermont, and you know, Vermont is a team that there's a couple fixtures here. You've got like Colgate, they're always in the NCAA tournament, and Vermont's starting to fit that bill too. I guess, you know, teams up in that area of the United States, they tend to kind of run shop, but John Becker's done a phenomenal job. You know, Tom Brennan was there. You got Sorrentine from the parking lot. He retires. Mike Lonergan takes over. And then John Becker has just been a consistent winner. I believe this is the fifth appearance for Vermont in the NCAA tournament. They have not won a game since the win over Syracuse. But this has become kind of a trendy play. Vermont taking the points. I did not take Vermont here. I think Marquette, you know, it's funny, Adam, because I thought there was a stretch there where Marquette was maybe a bit overvalued, because they kept winning because Shaka Smart is such a good coach as an underdog. But I ultimately think that this team is starting to play very, very well defensively, which is not something you could have said for a while. So, I'm going to stay off of this one as well. I get why people would take Vermont. They're a very good 3-point shooting team, but I think this Marquette team is just kind of got something special going there in Milwaukee. So I'm going to hold off on this one, even though normally I would probably look at the dog in this spot.
I don't think this is a very ideal draw for Vermont. And I guess that's easy to say when you're a 15 seed, no draw is ideal, but you know, for the America East Conference, I mean, it was the fourth worst conference in the country in terms of turnover percentage on defense. Those teams just, none of them are really all that aggressive. You don't really have to worry about giving the ball up. It's largely a conference of, you know, who's the best offense, who makes the most shots, they're going to be just fine. And that, more often than not, will be Vermont. But when you step up and play against the Big East, and specifically when you play against a team like Marquette, who plays that havoc defense, who forces you to speed up, forces you to turn the basketball over, those are things Vermont does not see. I mean, Vermont was 310th in the country, according to Torvik, in adjusted tempo. Marquette, 116th. Marquette can make Vermont really uncomfortable in this game, and I think that's ultimately what they do. Do they cover the 11.5, 12? I don't know. It depends on how well Vermont takes care of the basketball. If they're just giving up extra possessions left and right, you know who's probably going to cash in? A top 10 team in offensive efficiency. So I just... Look, I mean, this is not as good of a Vermont team as we've seen in some of the previous NCAA tournament appearances. This is one of the lower seeds that they've had, so in theory, they're taking on a stronger team. I just think Marquette's style of play is very problematic for Vermont. I could see a scenario where Marquette kind of gets out, maybe covers the first half number here, forces some turnovers, maybe Vermont settles down and adjusts. I could see them not covering the full game, but I think I may be on Marquette for the first half, -6, because I think the tempo and the turnovers are just going to throw Vermont for a loop early in this game.
Yeah, Vermont last year covered against Arkansas in the first round, but that was a Vermont team that had a pair of seniors kind of leading the way. This is a Vermont team that is riding high, but you mentioned in a conference in the America East that is pretty down. They've won 15 in a row. I was impressed. You know, they pulled away against UMass Lowell. They've got a couple pretty good sharp shooters that can go off and you know, take games over. Thinking in that game, it was Matt Verretto who hit a couple big threes late in that game. He was a transfer. I think he took some time off playing basketball, whatever. I mean, people don't really care about the specifics, but this is a team that can shoot the ball well, but not crazily well. This isn't, you know, a top 10 3-point shooting team, 73rd in the country in 3-point field goal percentage. So this is a good Vermont team, certainly not a vintage Vermont team by any stretch of the imagination. So, yeah, I think Marquette should take care of business, and that's why I'll stay off on this one. All right, before we get to our best bet recap here of the East region, taking a look at the odds to win the region, and we'll start. This is courtesy of BetMGM. Purdue plus 250. Duke plus 650, Tennessee 5-1, Marquette plus 450. I think I saw some 5-1s on Marquette if you like the Golden Eagles. Kansas State 9-1, Kentucky is 12-1, Michigan State 14-1, and Memphis at 20-1. Anything intrigue you, Adam, in the futures market?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, like the top of the bracket could go a million different ways. And I wouldn't be totally shocked. Purdue could find some way to beat the Memphis FAU winner. Purdue could very well lose to the winner of that game. You know, Duke, we talked about a lot. Tennessee, if they somehow can figure it out for a few games in a row, I mean, we know that they have a significant amount of upside, particularly on defense. They could ugly games up enough. And if they get hot from three, all of a sudden they're a completely different team. And then the bottom, I mean, Marquette, you know, you mentioned the defense is getting better, but they're kind of an all-offense team. I don't know which Kentucky team shows up from game to game. I think Kansas State is pretty live to come out of the bottom of the bracket. I there's so many ways this could go, and it kind of leads me back to the first question that you asked me of, is this the weakest region? And maybe weakest isn't the right word, but I think it's the region where you kind of look at it and you go, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if any of the top six seeds are the one to win it.
So that is what brings me to Memphis at 20-1. I bet this at BetMGM. I think Circa is down at 12-1, or that's where they were. I think the ceiling is really high on this Memphis team, and they could lose to Florida Atlantic. Look, they're a 1.5-point favorite at Circa, so it's not out of the question that they could get beaten by Florida Atlantic. But if they beat Florida Atlantic, they are the type of team that I think would potentially give fits to Purdue. You know, as a Purdue team that, look, we watched them. I mean, look at the pressure that Penn State put on them late in that game, and they almost crumbled. You know, Purdue is a team that over the last month of the season is like 20th in the country. So I think Purdue could struggle if they get a lot of pressure. Get uncomfortable. And if Memphis can get past FAU and beat Purdue in that second round, it's a whole new world when we get to Madison Square Garden here in this region. And, you know, if Memphis were to play, you know, Tennessee, if they were to play Duke with the size, that'd make me a little bit worried. But if we got, let's say, Memphis and Marquette, I think that's really a coin toss type of game because of just the styles that they play with the guards. So I got veteran guards. I got, you know, some decent size there with Memphis. So I actually have a 20-1 ticket on Memphis to come out of this East region. So, you know, what could go wrong when they play Florida Atlantic in the first round? So,
you know what though? I don't mind that for a few different reasons. You know, first, I mean, well, you like them to beat FAU. I think FAU is live in that game. I think that's a pretty close to a coin flip.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But Memphis and Purdue, massive pace war. Memphis loves to push the tempo. Purdue doesn't. That may be something that kind of works in Memphis's favor to kind of make that game a little bit uncomfortable for them. And then Tennessee, another team that doesn't want to push the tempo much. Memphis can kind of speed them up a little bit. And obviously there's some history there between those two programs, which gets really fun. You know, Duke is a team that doesn't play overly fast either. Memphis can create a lot of problems with their athleticism. They've got good guard play. They've got good bigs. I think the jury's kind of out on Penny Hardaway. I don't really know what kind of coach he is compared to some of these more accomplished guys, but Memphis is the right kind of team to embrace chaos if that's what happens. And I think it's a really sharp investment by you at 20-1, even if they lose to Florida Atlantic. I think it's a bet that you would make again if you had the chance.
Yeah, veteran guards, decent size, and they're a team that's not afraid. And they're a team that I was actually doing radio in Memphis, or a radio hit in Memphis, and I talked to, you know, the hosts about it, and, you know, they pointed out played Alabama to a 3-point game, three games against Houston, lost two of them, won the last one, lost one at the buzzer. You know, this is a team that's not afraid of the moment. They're adults. So, yeah, at 20-1, that's where I'm rolling coming out of this region. And that'll lead us into our best bet recap.
Best bet recap.
All right, I'll go quick, Adam. I'll add one. I'll go Memphis money line against FAU. I think -125, -130. Memphis to win the region at 20-1. And I think I'm going to take a little nibble on Oral Roberts +6.5. You know, Max Asemus, been there before, really good 3-point shooting team. And this Duke team, it feels like, is just getting a little too much love in the market. So I'm going to go ahead and take the points with Oral Roberts here, +6.5. Longest winning streak in the country. You know, really good 3-point shooting team, elite guard in the backcourt. And we've seen this story before with Duke in the first round as a, you know, kind of a normal high seed. So I'll add Oral Roberts +6.5.
All right. So for me here, I got that under in Tennessee and Louisiana under 136.5. Again, Tennessee's dependency on threes and the fact that they're just not very good at it. You know, that's really concerning. And again, Louisiana coming out of the weak Sun Belt, I'm not sure that they score a whole lot of points either. So like the under 136.5 there. So we have a best bet on every game over at VSiN.com. And nobody wanted to jump on the grenade that is that Montana State, Kansas State game. The more I think about it, the more I look at it, the more I'm kind of okay laying the 8.5 with Kansas State, which is the play that I put in that file. And as I mentioned, I mean, Montana State, when they've played quadrant one opponents the last 2 years, they've gotten their heads caved in. So they're playing a quadrant one opponent here. Maybe that's what happens in this game, despite the fact that, as you mentioned, it does appear that some more influential money is on Montana State here. That's kind of a segue into one of the futures that I did put in our, you know, NCAA tournament betting guide. We talked about it already. There is a high probability for chaos in the East region because you've got a weak number one. You've got a number two that's really good on offense. But as you mentioned, the defense is better. But I think that there are reasons to still be skeptical of Shaka Smart's team, especially if they're not forcing turnovers. I think Kansas State to win it all at 75-1 isn't a terrible investment. I think they could win the East region. And when you look up top at the South, I think Alabama's vulnerable because they're just not a great because they're a 3-point shooting team. They're very dependent on that. I don't know how great Arizona is. I think they're really good and I think they win that region, but I think Kansas State's live in that game too. So to me, it's kind of all about a different way of sort of taking Kansas State to win the East at a bigger number and then decide what I want to do with it if they make it to the Final Four. So do I think they make it? I don't know, but I think the price was right at 75-1, given kind of the composition of this East region for them to make a good run, maybe get to the Final Four, and then I'll have plenty of hedging margin when we get to that point.
All right, 75-1, book it. Purple Cats, can they come out of that East region, which looks wide open? All right, that's going to do it for our breakdown.
You don't have a bet. What? You don't have a bet to win the Basketball Classic or the CBI before we go here.
Here, how about this? I was just looking at scores, and I took a flyer. I took a flyer in the NIT futures market, and they just lost.
Oh, Washington State.
Yeah, it took Washington State.
I mean, Eastern Washington, they ran through the Big Sky and then completely fell apart, yet they beat Washington State and Pullman.
Oh, God. I was like, oh, Washington State was playing well. I bet you I'll be motivated. They lost in the first round.
Oh, this is such a fun time of year, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Hopefully no one's still listening to the podcast at this point. Oh, man. Well, at least I didn't put it out there. It's just my little bankroll. So at least it was just me that felt the pain. But I do like Youngstown State +6. Let's go Penguins on Wednesday hosting Oklahoma State in Youngstown, Ohio. Any NIT futures, CBI futures for you? No, breaking down the Daytona Beach bracket.
I haven't played any yet, but I think one thing to keep in mind real quick is that the NIT semifinals and finals are at Orleans Arena out here in Vegas instead of being at Madison Square Garden. So I don't know if that necessarily matters too much in the overall tournament handicap, but MSG is notoriously an under arena. So now they're playing at Orleans, which is a much smaller venue. And who knows, maybe I'll go check out the semis or the championship game when it gets here.
Yeah, I mean, when I think, you know, the Mecca of basketball, I think Orleans, baby. All right. That is going to do it for our breakdowns. We will have much more in this feed as the week goes on, including all 50 picks from the Circa College Hoops Challenge for Thursday's games and Friday's games from the VSiN Tonight Show with Matt Newmans and Wes Reynolds. For Adam Burks, I added an S to his last name for some reason. I'm Tim Murray. He is at Skating Tripods. I'm at One Tim Murray. Make sure to head to VSiN.com to check out all of Adam's breakdowns and all of our content. For Adam, I'm Tim. Please rate, review, subscribe. This has been the VSiN College Basketball Betting Podcast.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.